started a bit about half past lunchtime. So I've told from the point of view of a, I want to know how to pronounce this term, flaneur.
Yeah, the word flaneur is kind of superfluous to it. I was in an English grad course, or not grad course, an English upper year course a few years ago. I learned about the flaneur. It's like this concept of like an idle wanderer who goes through a place and has nowhere specific to be and no particular responsibilities. And then I used that in the description just because I liked the alliteration of feline flaneur. And then lo and behold, in the meantime, Ideas on CBC did a whole episode about the flaneur. So I was like, oh, sweet. I don't sound pretentious. I just sound like I'm in the moment. So yeah, that was, but yeah, basically just like an idle kind of wanderer.
Love it. And that's definitely the feel that one gets from listening, sort of wandering, and different people sort of come into the picture. I'd love to know was there some inspiration for some of the characters that this flaneur comes into contact with?
So I feel like it can get kind of tricky talking about writing when you're basing things from some real life experience, and I don't like the way that writers sometimes get pigeonholed as like, oh, you wrote this character based on this person, or this is based on yourself, and I'm like, it's all me, none of it is me, everything. So I guess definitely there are certain conversations and certain interactions that are reminiscent of things that I've had happen in my life or with my friends or in this kind of neighborhood, but then also drawing from like stuff my mom says, or like just kind of all over the place. But yeah, I guess I wanted to depict a few different sort of, the way that I think about the play is like it's kind of like this neighborhood where there's all these kind of like weird angled intersections, and you've got these people going in and out of each other's lives, and all of the characters are dealing with a lot of isolation and a lot of grief from like a brain injury and the disability that creates, and from, you know, widowhood, or even just like going through the grief of gardening and there's bugs all over your plants. And I guess kind of, I just wanted to sort of see the way like when people bump up against each other in those moments of grieving and kind of have some relief from it.
And definitely that connection of nature is something that really struck out to me as a listener. And I also understand that we're in the neighborhood that really gave you, perhaps you could say, the base for your story. I mean, we're just up the road from Friendship Park. Tell me about that connection.
Yeah, so now I live a little north of here, but I've lived in this neighborhood and around it for a few years. And I guess there's a lot of gardening, a lot of food sharing, like the mutual aid Cataraqui Kingston, what are they called? Really, really free veggie markets happen in this neighborhood and other neighborhoods around. And there's just kind of like a big sense of connection in that community. And also we're kind of near Bell Park, where there have been events by the Bell Park Project. This year there was a BioBlitz where people take the app iNaturalist and collect data to kind of show how much life there is in these places that are kind of under threat by developers. Mm-hmm. So all of that kind of weaves together. And I would be remiss not to credit the McBurney Park neighborhood Facebook group as well, which McBurney Park is the name of Skeleton Park, which is the park that we have an arts festival named after, close to here, just like that way, which would definitely be noisier to record an interview in. But that Facebook group is always like everyday active with people saying, hey, I bought this sunflower butter that my kids didn't like, who wants the rest of the container? Or like there's free this and that on this and that street. And also I found this cat walked into my house, and some pretty vicious debates have arisen on outdoor cats that I think kind of everybody taking like positions in a very strong way on a very complicated issue. So I kind of wanted to like both celebrate the kind of way that that community can, yeah, just kind of like bump up against each other, and then also like not take it too seriously, but always sort of take it lovingly and kind of represent that world.
Well, and next thing I'd like to get into is the music, as you know, the storyline just merges so seamlessly into a song. And I understand you wrote and sang throughout the production.
Yeah, I also played the guitar, piano, and melodica, and some little egg shakers, as well as, I think, a yogurt container tambourine thing that my housemate made in teacher's college.
Oh, pure creativity right there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It was a really fun kind of project because this was my first time really having to perform everything by myself. And typically I've been like, well, I'm a vocalist, but I'm not that good at instruments. So then I've had, like, in bands I've been in the past or with my partner, I've really, like, let other people's instrumental music, like, kind of say, well, I'm not as good as you, so why don't you take over? And I found that being forced to deal with, you know, I actually can kind of play some instruments, and or, for example, the Fruit Belt Blues arrangement is completely vocal, and I was like, well, I can sing. Four of me could sing at once. That's something. Yeah, it was kind of like a neat opportunity to completely DIY, or I guess DIM, do it myself.
So tell me about how this got to the Shortwave Festival and on the CFRC airwaves.
So in 2019, my friend Risha Andrade had reached out to me because she wrote a play for the first Shortwave Festival called A Strong Girl. And it's this, like, beautiful, like, also set in Kingston, like, lesbian ghost Victorian drama. And she was saying, like, I have this script, it's going to be produced, I really would like there to be a song in it. And she had heard me sing and write some songs in one of my earlier projects, Saf Decaf, which is all about, like, kind of like queer love and sentimentality. And so she asked me to write a song for that. And so I worked with the script and wrote a little song called Red and Winsome. And that ended up sneaking its way into A Strong Girl at the very end. And then when I saw the call for play applications come around for the, I guess in 2021, last year, I thought, hey, if Risha can write a play, I can write a play. Hey, if I can sing on the radio, I could do something. And then at that point, I had been writing a lot of music just from experiences like picking 100 dandelion heads to make syrup, or being very frustrated in a kind of very theatrical way with some cucumber beetles. And I thought, like, oh, this doesn't really feel like, I don't know, indie singer-songwriter EP material, but it feels very musical theatery, which is, I guess, the way that I tend. So then I thought, okay, how could I kind of concept album-y, musically put this together? And then I was scrolling on Facebook, and I was thinking about the neighborhood and cats and everything, and that all kind of transpired into sewing those scenes together.
And tell me about your experience working with the cast.
So it was very fun listening to the auditions. Some of them I was able to sit in on. And then, it was just really neat, like, the variety of talented people who came in. And I was especially just totally in love immediately with Elizabeth's voice. She plays, I didn't name any of the characters. She plays, they were alphabetized. She plays Dee, the widow, who just captured this tone of this character so beautifully. So we mostly rehearsed. We had a couple of Zoom meetings with the director, Anthony, where we read through it. And then those of us who were able to make it got together to do the recording. I ended up acting too, which is also something I was kind of nervous for. So they cast me as the most nervous character. And I'm the person who goes and says, hi, I made a pie with the sour cherries. It's a pie, is it a Christmas, a crumble, blah, blah, blah. So we kind of all recorded together, and it was really lovely and really, it felt very natural. And a lot of, almost everybody was involved with other Shortwave projects, like Shannon, who plays F, the cucumber beetle character, is the playwright for Garden of Edith, which also has some overlapping themes with this play that I thought was really interesting. Like, it, guess when the world shuts down and you're sitting in your garden, that's what you end up writing, some very thematically similar things. And Billy Kearns played E, the concussed character, and she also plays Magellan in the Soundcastle sequels. And then we ended up bringing in the festival director, Mariah Horner, to play the flirty dandelion character, and Becky, the director, Becky Bridger, the director of Soundcastle, ended up playing the person who's trying to flirt with the flirty dandelion characters. So we just kind of had all this this kind of really beautiful overlap between the cast and crew getting to be each other's casts and crews in other contexts.
And what would you say that you, was sort of making that transition into radio theater, what would you say that you learned from this experience?
I guess it kind of reminds me, so this is going to sound a bit out there maybe, but that's okay. It feels very similar to kind of preserving food in this way where, like, it was this year-long process, well, more than year-long process if you're counting the music writing, where, kind of gathering up music, writing these lines, and then the way that it was all recorded, I think, by June, and shortly thereafter, I had separately sent in the files for the music I had arranged and recorded, and then I didn't see it again. It was like pickles. Like, it was like I sent it off to the sound designer to fill the jars with brine and dill and herbs and whatever, garlic, always garlic. I guess it was just this like kind of long process in which it like fermented, soaked, I don't know, like became itself in different stages. And it's kind of neat tuning into the radio or playing it as a podcast, and it's this kind of preserved moment.
I thought you're preserving that experience.
Yeah. Well, huh. There's a line in the song Strawberry Brain, which was the first song I wrote after I had had a concussion, that's about, like, the whole idea is like preserve all my thoughts for later use. I'm under sweet sedation. And it was this kind of thing where when I was initially experiencing concussion symptoms, mm-hmm. part of me was thinking, man, like, this is such, like, good creative fodder, but I am so mentally and emotionally and physically broken, and just kind of writing down these little lines about, like, I have a strawberry brain. My brain's like a bruised strawberry. That sort of turns into something far later on. The preserving thing is neat.
I guess an experience like a concussion, I mean, like you said, like it was a source of creative inspiration.
Yeah, well, and it was also very much a source of, I think, humility to the universe, if that's not too broad sounding, because I had to, like, I was very much a person who relied on my ability to think quickly and speak quickly, and I was performing a lot in my band at the time, and I kind of thought, okay, I got bumped on the head, maybe I'll cancel next week's gigs, and then the week after I'll go and put earplugs in and still play at the mansion, and that was not a good idea. But there were moments going through the time where I was pretty disabled by my concussion where I had to figure out how to value myself just as a thing that is alive and in a capacity beyond what I could provide or like who could find me impressive or even my connection to music and to writing was really stilted there, and so I had to just appreciate being like a living organism on the planet, because otherwise I didn't feel like I wanted to be alive, and that's no good. So I think maybe that also connects to the matter of connection to nature, that like I really kind of got this deep sense of being just part of everything in the same way a strawberry or a bug or a cucumber is. And sort of letting go of the need to be smart or able as like my center as a person.
Well, Half Past Lunchtime can be streamed on the CFRC website. It's now up on the podcast there. So thank you very much, Haley, for joining me to talk about your production.
Thank you. And thank you for joining me at the intersection of plum and cherry and plum and cherry and chestnut. We're at the pentagram of jam in the fruit belt. And thank you.
Amazing.